The rose has its thorn. That's an interesting idea. This is a thought for today from Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, here in Campbell, California. The rose has its thorn. Roses are meant to be many wonderful things. The rose is a symbol of love. Rose is a symbol of caring. Rose is a symbol of sharing. Rose is a symbol of lots and lots of wonderful things. But think about the rose once, and think about how the rose means if you take one single red rose and you give it to a person, it means that they're your very special love. They're your only love, your true love. However, you give the rose to your true love, a man or a woman, and you hand the rose to them, and they grab the rose, and they get stuck with the thorns. And blood comes gushing out of their hands, and they say, "Oh my God, what is this all about?" You know. And you say to them, "This is love." Whenever you reach out to receive love, you reach out gently, with one or two fingers just gently touching. And if the thorn is there, you don't press down on it. You slide past it. But you'll find that every time you reach out with love, your fingers will slide past the thorns. They will never even know they're there. But if you reach out with demand and control and manipulation, you will find that you'll touch the thorns. And you'll touch the thorns, and they will be very, very disastrous to you. We all do this at times when we, in our eagerness, want to grab somebody and give them a big hug or give them a big love. The most precious hug is a hug that is sort of slipped into. You put your arms around the person that you find very wonderful and very fantastic, and slowly you increase the pressure of your attention to them. And your hands, as they say, are all over them. And you hug them and you love them, and you know that all is in divine order. And you never feel a thorn. Although everyone has thorns, everyone has a feeling of incompleteness or unhappiness. We sent our computer off yesterday to be rechecked by our computer people, and they went over it and went over it and went over it, and they found lots of little problems. And then the computer came back, and I attempted to work on it this morning for a couple hours. And every 10 minutes or so, the computer would smile, that benign smile that it has, and it would crash. And it would say, "We're saving your information because we're going to take a break. We're going to crash." And you try to press a button or two, and it doesn't make any difference. Then it says, "Please press the button and inform Microsoft that this is happening." I mean, it can do all these things, and it knows it's going to crash. It doesn't crash instantly. It crashes gently. Now, why does it crash at all? It says, "Well, you have not put certain new patches on your computer since you have bought it." Now, everyone buys computers. And when you buy a computer, it's not one that's fresh off of the shelf. It's one that's been sitting there, perhaps for a year or two. You say, "What, a year or two?" That's right. You look at the copyright on the software, and you find the copyright goes back to the year 2000. Now, it's interesting to me that when our computer people fixed my computer yesterday, they change the information on my copyright from 2003 to 2002. They took off the 1948-2003 and put on 1975 and 2002. Now, I found that most interesting. Now, why would people do things like that? I go through our home page information, and at the bottom very page there's a copyright. I don't know why that has to be there, but it's there. And the copyrights are all from 2002. Now, we've been in 2003, going on 2 months now. Why is it that we have problems? Because we don't take care of the little things. Every month we have a gist. And I have three processes of reading the gist whenever it comes to me to be proofed. It doesn't always come to me to be proofed, but whenever it comes to me to be proofed before it goes out. The first thing I do is to make sure the page numbers are on the right pages and on the right sides of the pages with the information that's supposed to be there. The second thing I do is I go to the index and make sure that the index has been properly indexed, that the title referring to the article and the page number are correct. And then I do an exhaustive, word by word, letter by letter, check of the entire gist from beginning to end, regardless that it has certain pages that run over and over again. Because if you don't do that, you'll find that the first of the year comes and you don't change your deadline, you don't change your dateline over to 2003. That's easily happening. Going into February and March, still using the previous year. But those are little details you look at. So, you might say, those are the little thorns. The little thorns on the rose of life. Now, the thorn does not have to prick us. It does not have to bother us. It does not have to do anything to make us unhappy. It's only when we do not pay attention to our responsibility about the thorn. And when we pay attention to our responsibility about the thorn, magic happens. Now, I'm in the process of reading in some literature that's come in from Microsoft on part of our Word package, and it says index. And it says, as you put the articles in, you just click on it, whatever page it is, and it'll automatically put it in the index. So if the article gets moved around anywhere, it will always change its page number to whatever it has been set up in the index, the automatic index. Now, that's pretty nice. And if we would do that, we would probably have that always taken care of, and that'd be a little chore that wouldn't have to be checked into. But that's not the program that we use. We don't use the automatic index. And as I was looking at a book, I was seeing several other automatic things, where in the back they would have a glossary, where words would have their definitions. And then would also have another thing, would be another type of an index, or the index is in back, the contents is in front, which tells where you could find different words. If you were looking for words like God, or spirit, or absolute, or awareness, or other types of words, it just instantly draws you right to that. Now, these are little things that are done automatically. You look at a book, the copy of our gist, and you say, well, that wouldn't be too difficult to catalog those things. And then you look at the book, The Art and Science of Wholeness, and you say, my goodness, that would be quite a job to catalog all those things. And it would be. But you see, it doesn't have to be a thorn. It doesn't have to be something that is difficult for us and makes us unhappy. It can be something very, very simple. And it's so simple. I was talking to Jeff Provence yesterday. He's our stock man. And I said, Jeff, you're a computer wizard. How do you use the bookmark? I said, I've attempted to use the bookmark many times, and every time I attempt to use it, it doesn't let me in. And he says, well, let's see what you're doing. And so he looks at what I'm doing, and he says, well, maybe it goes on the file name. Maybe there's supposed to be no spaces in there. It's supposed to be just a set of letters or numbers or so forth without spaces. And I said, huh, all right. So I put chapter 1, CHP 1, you know, with no letters, no spaces, and it came up. And it said, add? Yeah, sure, add it, you know. And then I went to each chapter heading and put chapter 2, chapter 3, CH 2, CH 3. I could have just added C 2, C 3, you know, it wouldn't matter. And so then, whenever I wanted chapter 5, I would just go to my bookmark and click on chapter 5, and whoops, right up there it would come. Boom, right to the front. Chapter 8, and I could make a mistake and have the wrong chapter number, and the wrong chapter would be given to me. But you see, the thing usually doesn't make mistakes because it's a mechanical gadget that is established to do these things correctly. The mistake comes in all these years, I never bothered to use it. And I would have loved to use it because I had a page through page to go to page 99 or page 86 or something like that. Whereas I had just had that thing set up on there, I could have done it so easy. It was a little thorn in my book when I had to do all those things. And then Jeff came along and said, well, try it from a different point of view. Pretend it has to be a file name, not just the ordinary name that you're used to. And so I pretended, and lo and behold, it worked. Now, how many difficult things do we have in our life that are really challenging to us and keeping us from having great experiences, which, if we were to know the solution, would be quite simple? Because most things are very, very simple. Now, when I go back after our talk today, I will check my computer again and install the patch that they call for and see what goes on and see what the problem is. Now, who knows, but the problem may be some very simple little thing. 5 times I did the same action. I typed a little story, and then I went through the story and made italic each of the statements that were made in the story. And then as soon as I finished them, it says, okay, you done? All right, doesn't work. I'm going to kill it. And it changed all. But it didn't save the italics that I put in. It saved it before the italics. But it didn't save the italics. Now, that's interesting, you know. Now, maybe what I should do is to put some italics in, then save it, and then go on and put some more. Now, would it kill it the minute I tried to save it? Or the minute I tried to leave the italics? If it did, then that might be an interesting thing for me to know. But knowing that, how would I do anything about it? Fascinating. I was reading in the PC magazine about upgrading old PCs and how sometimes it's cheaper to buy new ones and sometimes it's not. You can just buy a little part here or there. And they went through all the possible parts, all the possible things. And then they give you 10 tips of areas where the computer wants to crash and do other things, and you should go in and clean those things up. And then it gives you other things and other things. And I thought to myself, my goodness, you spend all of your time putting your computer in order. Well, sometimes that's the way it goes. Daniel had always irritated me. He's our webman, and he always irritated me. I wanted to take the computer that we bought for putting our lectures on the internet and use it for other things. He says, don't do it. And I wanted to do that, and I wanted to do it. Well, occasionally I'd snitch on him, you know, I'd put a few things in there that I wasn't supposed to put on there. And then I would go in because it would stop working right. And he said, what did you do here? What did you do here? You put these things on. So long as you keep a pristine computer dedicated to just the particular things we're doing, allowing nothing else to come in there, it'll work. It'll work. I remember our Sony that we had Gertrude using. She was using our little mini portable Sony for years, and she was running all of her computer work through it, all of her email through it, all of the things that she did for years. Just had a ball. Never a problem. It always just ran. Right? Yep. It always just ran. And then when we gave her a new one, we gave her a standard computer, as she was trying to put the thing in, it ran into all sorts of problems. And her computer man had to help her out. But you see, the simpler we are, the more beautiful life is. And the more complex we are, the more thorns we have. And we want to live our life so that we are as simple as possible. We love intellectual arguments. We love to get into great, deep discussions. And it really helps us to understand why the world is here and what brought the creation into being and how the stars operate and the moon and the sun. That's fascinating. But wouldn't you say what would really be fascinating would be how I could live every moment of my life as a happy, content person? Mm-hmm. But that's not intellectual. That's not having computers, and that's not having television sets and DVDs, and that's not having electric lights and watering systems for your garden. I remember as a boy, we had our victory garden in the back of our house, and I would go out there every morning and every evening, and I would water the 2 acres of land on which I had my victory garden. Everything grew like crazy. Wonderful. And for me, the time standing out there watering the garden was a time of meditation, a time of listening within, a time of saying, this will be a fun day in school. I'm going to do lots of great things today. But you see, if I put the sprinkler system on, had the timer on it, it goes on, it stays on for 20 minutes or whatever, then it shuts itself off and goes on to another one. There's no time for me to meditate. There's no time for me to be listening within and know my real self. And then we cook our suppers. And then we know things are going to take certain times, and so we put them in sequence like that. But then we do the stupidest thing that we could ever want to do. We let our attention become diverted. We let somebody come in and talk to us. We let somebody come in and say, oh yeah, did you hear about so-and-so? They were doing this and that and the other thing. And our attention is diverted. And our meal is not cooked as perfectly as it could. And we're not happy that we haven't done a perfect job. But it's our fault. You see, the blind, deaf, and dumb person is really blessed. They do whatever they're going to do, and they don't know anybody else is around them. They're not disturbed by anybody else. And now you don't say, well, you talk like that, we're liable to end up that way too. But no, it's a concept. The blind, deaf, and dumb person is just as wonderful as anybody else. But they are in their special little world. And they're relaxed. And we want to go and disturb them. We're going to make them feel welcome. They already feel welcome. They feel the vibrations of the house. They feel the vibrations of your presence. They know whether they're welcome or not. Do you? If you close your eyes and somebody walks up to you, would you feel good about it? Would you feel their vibrations right away? Would you know what their intention was right away? If you know who you are, you would know what their intentions are. If you know who you are, you'd know what their vibrations are. Now, what role are we playing in our life? Do we know? Are we aware of the thorns that are all around us? Are we aware of our position in life? Think about it. I walk the meditation paths here every day and have a very wonderful walk. And as I walk around, I see horse hoofs that have been walking on our path. And we ask people not to ride their horses on our meditation path, because when we walk the meditation path, we don't want anything to divert our attention. And so when we see a bunch of horse apples, or we see horse hoofs, our attention is diverted. Now, how can we do that and not have our attention diverted? We can consider the horse's hoofs just as much as we consider anything else part of the landscape. No problem at all. And as we consider that, what happens? We are not diverted by that. So, we want to be master ourselves. The thorns in life are our diversions. They're not bad, they're just distracting. We get over them very quickly. But we want to live our life in the most perfect harmony and peace and joy, untouched by all of these things that seemingly go on around us. We want to be totally ourselves, having fun and doing our own thing. But think of this as my closing gesture to you today. Today, you sit at your computer and you write your articles and stories. Yesterday, you sat at your desk and you took out your pencil or pen and wrote. Years ago, you took out a chisel and a piece of slate and you chopped the markings into it to tell your story. Or you took papyrus, which is the paper made from the reeds of the river, and you would write on that in your interesting cuneiform writing. And then before that, you didn't have a language. And it didn't matter, and that is, you didn't have a written language. You didn't have a written language because nobody could read it anyhow. Mm-hmm. And before that, you perhaps didn't talk very much, because you didn't have a language that people would understand in between your tribes of ooga, ooga, ooga. You know, you just spoke with whatever feeling came to you. You see, grunting, we talk so beautifully, you know. Don't forget that talking is a learned thing. It is not something you come up with naturally. You teach children how to enunciate. You teach adults how to enunciate. Sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't. But years ago, not that it was a better time to live, but years ago, we were not confronted with all the technology of today. And the technology of today is horrendous. All you have to do is look at the young people walking down the street and you think to yourself, what's going to happen next? No meditation, no introspection, just having the music in their ears turned up as high as they can. Now that's not good, it's not bad, but we want to go back to the time of no distractions. And the more distractions that we give ourselves, the less we are tuned in to the rose in our life. For each distraction is a thorn, and it takes us away from perhaps what we really want to think about. So I say to you, think on these things, for they are beautiful, for they are good. And I love you, and I see your day filled with every beautiful thing.
Beautiful roses.